We'll open the meeting. Good morning. It is 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 29th, 2012, here in the North Dakota Public Service Commission Hearing Room, 12th floor of the State Capitol. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We have a regularly scheduled meeting this morning. And for the record, and anyone who may be listening in, this is Commission Chairman Tony Clark.
Good morning, Kevin Kramer.
And good morning, Brian Kolk.
I would move passage of consent.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Moving to items in my portfolio, TC1, I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company's application for advanced determination of prudence for three power purchase agreements with Manitoba Hydro Electric Board, case number PU-12-70.
Second.
Again, this is a notice of opportunity for hearing. It relates to a filing that XL has made for an advanced determination of prudence. Basically, the Manitoba Hydro PPAs or power purchase agreements, they essentially extend the current contracts for an additional 10 years, which thus extends the party's relationship until 2025. That's the parties being XL and Manitoba Hydro. The Manitoba Hydro PPAs work together to form a single transaction that results in 725 megawatts of summer season capacity for 10 years, along with associated energy with that capacity. And it has the potential to for that amount to increase to 850 megawatts in 2021.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the Commission file an application with the Cass County District Court, East Central Judicial District, for appointment as trustee of Anderson Seed Company, Inc. of Mentor, Minnesota, under North Dakota Century Code Chapters 60-02 and 60-04 in Public Service Commission case number GE-12-78. I further move that Commission file ex parte order to preserve trust assets until the court issues its order granting or denying the application.
Second.
This is a particularly concerning matter. Last week, the Commission issued a cease and desist order with regard to Anderson Seed after receiving information in late January and early February that there were issues with regard to farmers not being paid for sunflower seed that was delivered to Anderson Seed in 2011. And as a result of that, we did issue the cease and desist order. This is actually applying to district court for trustee in an insolvency proceeding. This case is probably going to become increasingly complicated as it gets worked out, at least if everything appears as it is. The facilities in North Dakota are licensed in Cass and Pierce County in Durbin and Sells. The Durbin facility in Cass County is a 296,000 bushel warehouse. The Sells facility is a 291,000 bushel warehouse. They've held licenses since 2003 and 2004, respectively. Anderson Seed's based out of Mentor, Minnesota. They also have a facility in Redfield, South Dakota. So you have three different states and three somewhat different licensing laws at play. We know from conversations with our counterparts at the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission that there's significant concern with the Redfield facility and outstanding debts that are owed to farmers there. Here in North Dakota, the bond that's on file as required under law and rule is $280,000. We have already received filed claims to date. These are just the filed claims. 13 cash sales for $1,167,000, 8 credit sale contracts totaling $280,000. We have reason to believe that both of those numbers will increase significantly over the coming weeks. We've received, Sue has probably talked to 80 different producers, and we've had, she's fielded something like 80 calls. We've talked about 40 producers who've asked for instructions on filing a claim. Some of these we're going to have to sort through. We need to determine the validity of the claim itself, whether it's in the proper jurisdiction. It would appear from some of the paperwork we've received so far. There may be some where they are North Dakota producers but had delivered to a facility in South Dakota or Minnesota. We probably will have South Dakota and Minnesota producers who may have delivered to facilities in North Dakota. So it'll require a good deal of sorting out, but it does appear that it's going to be a significant insolvency, and the bond does not look like it's going to be close to the outstanding debt owed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE-12-91, canceling warehouse license number 1230, issued to Dakota Oilseed Mills, LLC, at Northwood, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Northwood is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
This facility, you may remember, was one that went through an insolvency, not under this particular arrangement, but they have been operating on a cash-only basis since they were since the facility was licensed under slightly different ownership. There are no outstanding storage obligations or any concerns in that regard. It's a result of a request to discontinue business.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Culp.
Good morning. Excuse the voice a little bit. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order on settlement in Northern State Power Company's 2011 electric rate increase application, case number PU10657, Northern State Power Company's 2012 electric rate increase application, case number PU11-55, and Northern State Power Company's customer credit-DOE settlement application, case number PU11-557. Basically, what I'll try to go through now is a series of events over the last year, almost year and a half, dealing with NSP's rate increase application. In December of 2010, NSP filed for a rate increase for the year of 2011 for approximately 12% or $19.7 million, and also for 2012 test year of 2.57%, approximately $4.2 million. The justification they used was they needed to continue investment to maintain, improve, and replace their infrastructure, an additional cost to comply with new regulatory requirements, and general cost increase due to general economic trends. So once the initial filing was made, this commission suspended the rates, if you will, and set up the matter for investigation and hearing and public input comments. Also, there was a setup early of we want to make sure we set the right sessions for public input. We got basically everything put into place for that. We set up public input sections for May 23rd at 7 p.m. and May 24th at noon. One of the significant things that happened early on in the case was in May 10th of 2011, we received notification from the company that the Anexco Development Corporation project would no longer be taken over by XL Energy / NSP. That's the 150-megawatt wind farm that was down in Maricourt. So that further adjusted the rate the company was asking for, quite honestly adjusted it down to the revised numbers of 10.94% for 2011 and 1.44% for 2012. So we continued on with the hearings and the setup. And basically the issues to be considered is what is the value of NSP property used and useful? What is the appropriate rate of return for the company? What are just and reasonable rates for NSP property? And what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return for NSP? Also, I guess after May, this would be in August, NSP filed with the commission a petition for approval of a credit mechanism to refund approximately $4.9 million received by NSP pursuant to a settlement with the United States regarding the Department of Energy partial breach of its contract to take spent nuclear fuel beginning January 31st of 1998. That's the case number PU11557. Basically what that was they wanted to include this, and I think it was a good idea, all inside this rate case to take care of all these issues at the same time. So the hearings were held, and in September of 2011, a settlement agreement was entered into by NSP, our advocacy staff, and filed with the commission to resolve all outstanding issues in the current cases. What was interesting at this point is the initial settlement agreement was filed, and we had our work session, the three of us, and that's really the point, I think, where we first got to go through of additional concerns that I had, that we had, on staffing for the company, system maintenance, and overall reliability. And there was a lot of discussion that we had during the work session, which resulted in a follow-on settlement agreement being filed, and the same kind of scenario developed where we had additional concerns about staffing, about reliability. And finally, a settlement agreement was filed December 23rd of 2011, entered in by advocacy staff and also by filed in front of the commission. The big things that were in that December settlement, which is perhaps the one we're going to vote on today, is a 10.4% return on equity, an increase in annual revenue of $13.7 million for 2011 and $2.01 million for 2012, a refund of customers to be issued within 90 days of the implementation of the final rates. And right now, if the if it was figured for March 1st, there'd be a $37 return to every customer based on, if you will, the final rate is less than the interim rate, as well as the additional cost for the Department of Energy settlement are included in those numbers. There's also some numbers that were included, if you will, back to the company, where from, cost incurred by Xcel in the Minot flooding area from May to October 3rd are also included in this. So we've given the company back $862,000 as it relates to cost incurred by flooding. Other additional items that are included in this settlement agreement that the company has agreed or will agree to do, I guess, is that the $250,000 in 2012 for installation of approximately 25 IntelliTeam automated switches in Fargo, North Dakota. During the rate case proceedings, there was several outages that took place in the Fargo region, and some of the discussion took place was that the had some of these switches been in place, some of the outages that took place would not have perhaps occurred or have been nearly as severe. So I think that was significant that the company has agreed to install these. Now the customers are going to pay for them, but it's all going to be help in enhanced reliability in the system. Also in 2012, the cost for an additional vegetation management crew to keep up with the additional cost of tree trimming in the system. There was one of the outages that took place was looks like because the tree trimming was not done adequately, that perhaps some of the outages may have occurred. Also, there's going to be a program for 3 years to locate and replace several of the critical cabling in the Fargo system, and additional costs associated with a electrical engineer to be based in Fargo to basically monitor the North Dakota system and continue the project upgrades of much of the cabling. So the December settlement provides for the following apportionment by revenue requirements. So basically for residential service, it'll be an 8.7% increase. Commercial non-demand metered, 7.4%, and commercial demand metered, about 10.6%. One of the other things that's included in this is a requirement from the commission to the company that within 90 days of this order, they will file with the commission their plans to increase reliability and a service quality plan for to increase their performance. One of the things that we talked a lot about during the work sessions was, you know, almost like a metric of how do we measure reliability as maybe ties to rate of return. And so I think this is almost like a bridging step where the company is going to file a reliability plan that we'll be able to monitor. They'll report to us. And we've already received notification that Xcel may be filing a rate increase not too far down the road. So this is a good step, I think, to continue to increase reliability in the North Dakota region. So with that, the final overall rate increase is 9.6% across all customer classes. And let's see if I've missed anything else here. I think that's it. Basically, it was a long process as far as I was concerned, but it was important to get to the right end. Don't try to hurry this along. I found that the settlement agreement, the first one that was filed, was a good step after the hearings were taking place, but it was very good, I think, for the three of us to lay out our concerns, and I appreciate the company addressing those concerns and following the settlement agreements, and I think what we have in front of us today is a pretty good document, so thank you.
The thing that gets a little bit confusing in this regard is the nature of interim rates. Of course, under state law, the company is entitled to interim rate relief, which means that they can implement at the time that the rate case is filed increased rates subject to refund, including interest, which happened in this case. Now, the rates that the commission is ultimately authorizing is less than the interim rate increase that they were entitled to under the law. So while it's an increase from where the company was a year and a half ago or so, it'll actually be, from a customer's perspective, a decrease from what they're paying right now on their future bills. So there's that rate decrease from where they are currently at that's factored in. In addition, there's this one-time credit, which is comprised of a number of things. The largest chunk of it is a DOE settlement that Xcel received. And then that's offset a bit with Minot reconstruction expenses. So the the credit that an average consumer will see will be about $37 a month. That's if you're an average consumer, which is about 821 kilowatt hours per month. If you use more than that, you probably get a little more. If you use less than that, you'll get a little bit less. For me, the key to this settlement really was the dealing head-on with these reliability issues that we've had in the XL system. They've been especially pronounced in the Fargo area. The original settlements, I think it's fair to say, the commission had some concern with, that there wasn't enough emphasis on the reliability matters that were at hand. And so there was an iterative process where they came back with a couple of other settlements that I think more adequately deal with the issue of reliability. The IntelliTeam switches, I think, are a good step. They're a form of smart grid. It's a smarter switching device that allows for quicker restoration when there are power outages. The Fargo-based engineer who will be looking specifically at some of the cabling issues, some of the older cable that may be less reliable, and issues related to planning for future growth so that we don't have reliability problems in the future. The vegetation management team that will specifically be tasked to North Dakota, especially as we've had a bit of a wet cycle, we've had greater tree growth, and there have been issues. There was one in particular I can think of in North Fargo that hopefully will get a handle on some of the reliability concerns we've had, in addition to the increased reporting requirements, which could eventually lead towards a more robust service quality plan.
The bottom line is that future bills for a typical customer will be $1.40 less than they currently are, on top, of course, then that $37 one-time refund that will come to the customers sometime this summer. I don't recall that we've ever had so much activity in the middle of a rate case, and I applaud both the commission staff and the company for dealing with the added complexities. And this is a plenty complex rate case, but you throw a flood on top of that, you throw a DOE settlement, which I guess I have to give the company a lot of credit there as well, because I think they seized that opportunity at just the right time when other jurisdictions were experiencing not quite as good a negotiation outcome with the Department of Energy regarding spent fuel storage. And then as my colleagues have said, these reliability issues, which were significant and frustrating for a lot of our customers, and that frustration, of course, splashes over to us. So the automated switches will deal with some of those major outages. The replacement of underground cable will deal with perhaps more local challenges, and having an engineer on the ground to sort of monitor it all is going to be, I think, helpful for everybody. And gives us both a sense of security and a sense of confidence that things will be better going forward.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item BK2, I move the commission issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing for Montana Dakota Utility Company's application for a transmission cost recovery rate, case number PU11672, and a transmission cost recovery tariff, case number PU11681.
Second.
In October of last year, MDU filed for approval to implement a transmission cost recovery rider pursuant to North Dakota Century Code, and also file an update to its original filing. MDU proposes to recover MISO transmission costs related to net revenue allocated to North Dakota retail customers. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by April 6th of 2012. An informal hearing is currently scheduled for April 11th, 2012 at 1:30. And this looks very similar to the one we just did with Otter Tail.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item BK3. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Dickey Rural Telephone Company, Dickey Rural Telephone Cooperative, for certificates of public convenience and necessity to provide facility-based incumbent local exchange telecommunication services in the Gwinner, Lisbon, Ashley, Edgley, Ellendale, Foreman, Culm, Lemoore, and Oaks exchanges in North Dakota, case number PU12-74, and the application of Dickey Rural Telephone Cooperative for designation as an essential telecommunications carrier to receive federal universal service funding in those exchanges, case number PU1273.
Second.
In February of this year, Dickey Rural filed an application for certificates of public convenience and necessity provide facility-based exchange, local exchange telecommunication services in the communities that I read. The issues to be considered are the fitness and the ability of the applicant to provide services and the adequacy of the proposed service. Also on February 10th, Dickey Rural filed an application for expansion of ETC designation in the geographical areas that I read. The issues to be considered in the case number PU1273 are also the qualification of the applicant under the Telecommunication Act of 96 to serve as an ETC.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. And that concludes the items that are on the regular agenda. That's right. I was already moving on to the announcements. Sorry, Commissioner Kramer.
At least a couple people just gasped.
Yeah.
This, and since we're off track a little bit, I'm going to do it better than that. I want to hold over KC1 over to the admin portion only because I think it's going to require a slight amendment. I had a discussion with our attorney just prior, and I just want, in fairness, I want to make sure we have a little discussion, that we all three have a little discussion with him prior to, then perhaps voting on it, hopefully at that time with a little bit of amendment. Okay? So, KC2... I move the Commission adopt the amended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order concerning Rangeland Pipeline LLC's construction of approximately 20 miles of crude oil pipeline in Williams County, North Dakota, case number PU10637.
Second.
You might recall that this is this midstream line up in Williams County, which takes Bakken crude from a receipt point to a another facility that involves third parties as well as rail facilities, was cited. It's nearly completely constructed, but there was one area where there was, upon the original filing, thought to be an exclusion area. It was a cultural area, cultural resource area. After Class 3 cultural resource survey, it was determined that it was not, in fact, an exclusion area. The SHPO concurred, that is to say the State Historic Preservation Office, concurred with that finding of no, not being an exclusion area, and so we're simply amending this order that allow that those last few feet to be built, and it involves, a pump station in that particular area. So everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends items in my portfolio for the regular agenda. I would like, when we move the KC1 over to admin, perhaps we can put that at the top after consent.
Sure. Okay, now we can get to announcements. The commission has a couple of hearings coming up over the next few weeks. Tomorrow, March 1st, Thursday in Carrington, and it looks like the weather may have given us a break, so we'll be able to hold it. Starting at 9 a.m., we have case number PU-09-670, Minn Kota Power Co-op, 345 kV Transmission Line Center to Grand Forks. On Monday, March 5th, 10 a.m., in the Oliver County Courthouse in Center, a courtroom we've become well familiar with. Again, 10 a.m., PU-11-620 Elite, Inc., 230 kV Transmission Line, Mercer, Morton, and Oliver County Siting Application. Just a note for commission watchers. The commission actually...
groupies.
Yeah, for commission groupies. has rearranged its commission schedule just a little bit. You'll note that our the March 14th meeting, which would be 2 weeks from today, has been canceled. We're going to go 3 weeks before our next meeting, March 21st at 10 a.m., Wednesday, March 21st. So we'll have an additional week in there. The one that was on the 28th has been canceled, and then we've rescheduled for the 11th. So basically, next meeting the 21st, and then we'll be every 2 weeks after that. With that, are there any closing comments? If not, we'll take questions.
Concerning Anderson Seed, you, Commissioner Clark, you basically said that you've got some very real concerns about this one. Can you again explain to me, it's a case of you're going to have multi-jurisdictions, multiple facilities, and just problems with bond not being enough? Is that kind of sum it up?
Yeah, it's kind of all of the concerns that we've had in different cases all rolled into one. I mean, we've had cases where we've had multiple jurisdictions before. We've had cases where there appeared to be large outstanding liabilities where the bond isn't coming close to covering it. But this is one that has both of those in the same case. We've got multiple jurisdictions, and it appears that multiple jurisdictions where there are big outstanding liabilities at each of them. The initial claims that we're getting are very large, and there are a number of them. The bond on file, as I said, is $280,000, and if the claims are all deemed valid or even a large portion of them, it's not going to come close to being able to cover that. There are some credit sale contracts, it would appear. The credit sale contract indemnity fund will pay for a portion of those claims. That fund has about $7 million in it right now. So at least given what we're seeing, there appears to be adequate money in the credit sale contract indemnity fund. But even that is, under state law, only paid out at 80% or a maximum of $280,000 per producer. It would appear that the credit sale contract fund will provide greater relief than what we may be able to under the bond.
There's also the additional issue of, I don't know what the status is of this, but of, you know, moving of grain. You probably have more to tell us when we have the opportunity. But
yeah, I had a chance to talk with Sue about that this morning. We have some concerns about how grain has been moved around and that there may not be a lot available in the North Dakota facilities. How each state under their own laws treats grain on hand as available for assets will be an open question. There are potential legal issues with regard to if grain has been moved in a recent period of time. Is that available for North Dakota producers, or at least producers who are eligible for protection under North Dakota state law, trusteeship? So these are all legal questions that are going to have to be sorted out in a rather complex proceeding, and one where there is big money liabilities that are out there. I personally, and I'm sure the whole commission, has a great deal of concern for the producers that are at risk in this case. It sounds like there may be some that have significant outstanding debt that is owed, and just from a personal standpoint, you have concern for those producers. And we'll, of course, try to do as much as we can within the law as trustee to gather as many assets for them as possible.
Do you have any idea whether this is anything other than a civil matter?
I suppose it's too early to tell. I mean, clearly our jurisdiction is, with regard to civil law, is our duty as trustee. In addition, there may be civil matter and civil suits that are brought up by farmers on their own to the degree that they're still owed money after our trusteeship. They still have their rights as someone who's owed money. Beyond that, it's probably too early to speculate.
How much about the Excel case, how much is a ratepayer, a residential ratepayer, with the demand that you mentioned? Was it 821 kilowatt hours per month?
From the initial cost, the average ratepayer is $6.56 more than the initial, before the rate case started.
Okay.
A decrease of about $1.40 per month from the interim rate.
Okay. And that's for an average user, which, according to Excel, their average user is 821 kilowatt hours per month.
So, in other words, the rate that the bill that a 821 kilowatt residential user, the bill they're paying now, they're going to be paying $1.40 less, but they're going to be paying $6.56 more per month than they were before the case began.
Yes,
I understand that.
That sounds correct.
What are they paying? Are they paying now $6.56 plus $1.40?
Yes.
Okay.
So roughly now they're paying $7.96, about $8 a month now, and then it goes down $1.40 after the interim gets reduced.
And then in addition, in probably June or July, they'll be receiving a one-time bill credit of, depending on usage,
$37.
Correct.
Okay. And the bill credit will be calculated according to their usage?
Correct. And then it won't be a refund, just be an offset.
When are the rates taking effect? Is it March 1st?
Our order says March 1st, but they have to file the tariffs and some other things, so that date will probably slide a little bit.
There's an awful lot of emphasis on Fargo reliability? Is there emphasis on reliability elsewhere amongst other in other cities that XL serves?
Well, there is. The challenges we've seen in reliability have been centered around Fargo. I mean, quite honestly, the Minot system has performed very, very well given all the challenges with flooding. We haven't seen the kind of outages in Minot that we've seen anywhere else in the state. Grand Forks, we've not seen any major outages up there. The outages we've seen have all been centered around Fargo, so that was the concern that I know that I had, is that what's different about the Fargo system than the Minot system? And when you look back to some of the questions that came out during the hearing, the Fargo system is not staffed to the same level that the Minot system is, and that, I think, led to some of the questions that came out after the initial settlement agreement.
I would also contend that the flood restoration costs are a reliability issue as well, and those are centered on Minot. Keeping the electricity, it's a different sort of reliability issue, but it's certainly all related to electric reliability. And so as the commission sees concerns in different parts of the state, whether it's Minot, Grand Forks, Fargo, wherever, we try to direct the utility to take care of those. And, of course, then the entire system, they run an integrated system, so those costs are spread across the state.
Do we have any idea why there was the concentration of reliability problems in Fargo?
Well, it's a great question, because you remember the automated switches that were part of the solution that are part of this rate case deal with what are called feeder level outages. And there were some pretty significant ones where entire sections of the city went down and went down for a fair amount of time. And what the challenge with that is the ability to restore that power quickly, to isolate the problem and then restore it. And these automated, hopefully, feeders will do that. So that was somewhat unique in Fargo. You also might recall there was an issue related to North Fargo, a residential area that was eventually identified as a tree issue where trees and a strong wind and just a lot of things happening at the same time, and the trees were too large and created this rather significant inconvenience and cost to citizens in a North Fargo neighborhood. Then there is the third somewhat unique circumstance where there are a number of neighborhood outages close to the river where there's older underground and where they have, speaking of floods, there's been a lot of moisture for the last several years. To what degree do you blame the flood? What degree do you blame the age of the cable or what the make of the cable? But there were very specific circumstances in Fargo that were, at least if not identifiable, at least anecdotally appeared to have some specific concerns. So we also, by the way, had some residents of Fargo, obviously, that were not interveners in the case, but at least expressed concerns. One that testified, actually, and we have a pretty good record of specific complaints regarding reliability in Fargo-Moorhead area or Fargo area.
Were the problems that were caused by trees, I mean, was that particularly, frustrating? I mean, it seems like tree trimming.
Well, that goes back to the staffing levels of the questions that were brought up during the hearing, is that, my dad was a lineman for many years, so was Kevin's. That's a basic function of a lineman, to get out there and do those things. And if you've got people there that are watching the system, it seems like those things are avoidable. So that brought the question of, is there someone completely dedicated to the North Dakota system? And that's where the additional manning, I think, really came into place, that when you look at the numbers of people that have been removed out of the North Dakota system for Excel, it's folks that have been working in Grand Forks and Fargo. They've kept their Minot numbers the same and actually perhaps grown them some. So that was the emphasis on the eastern part of the state, where I felt that they've perhaps reduced some of the services that should be there.
And Dale, I mean, specific to tree trimming. Tree trimming is one of the most cost-effective ways to keep the lights on. And we've seen, not just in North Dakota, but across the country, where an emphasis is not placed on tree trimming and you have a weather event. I think this northeast blizzard that happened earlier in the fall was a perfect example of it. Connecticut's is very protective of their trees, and they've had issues with local jurisdictions not allowing tree trimming to take place. And we understand why. It's not always the prettiest thing in the world when you have a line running right through the middle of a tree and they have to carve it up. But at the same time, tree trimming does a lot in a very cost-effective way to keep the lights on, because it just takes one branch on a hot, windy day blowing into a line to cause a major damage, which is exactly what happened in North Fargo.
One of the specific areas of frustration with regard to the tree trimming issue was that the company did, in fact, claim and I suppose proved that they were maintaining the appropriate tree trimming schedule, but that it was a particularly fast-growing season the last couple of seasons. And, you know, it's not like there are that many trees to keep track of in North Dakota.
One of the things, well, exactly. One of the things I think that's significant about this case is that we basically directed them within 90 days to give us a service reliability plan that I think really sets the stage for the next rate case. That, you know, we've, if you will, that they've been given some additional revenues to put in some additional items which will upgrade their reliability. If we come back, they come back in front of us in a year or so again, and there's no increases in reliability, it'll probably be a much different rate case.
You mentioned the next rate case. When is that going to be?
Well, in some of the questioning back and forth, they sent notices that it could be as early as late this year or early next year. So this is, I've been in the commission for 4 years, and this is my fourth rate case. And prior to that, I don't know how many years.
We hardly had them before you got here. I don't know what the deal is.
Changes. I think there is.
Can we actually say that Xcel is going to be adding to its branch office?
Yes, they are.
Hey, by the way, this is, if I remember right, this is contract work, not so much FTE work.
Tree trimming is a contracted, but the engineer is a full-time person.
You mentioned, you know, staff people that they have had in Grand Forks and Fargo and that the numbers have decreased. Do you have any numbers there? I mean,
The numbers were brought out during the rate case, but basically what's happened is they used to have full-time staff that have been removed, and then contractors now coming and doing the work. So there was contractors that were reading the meters and some of the questions that we had early on. And perhaps contracting is a good model if it works, but when you need people out there every day looking at these systems, that's where I'm not convinced that the contractor model is the right case for Grand Forks and Fargo.
You might recall, Dale, you asked about other communities. I suppose it was 3 winters ago. You
Thompson.
Were here when we had the issue in Thompson. That was a gas issue. But we also had the electric, the transformer issue up in Grand Forks during a, you know, particularly cold winter. That once that substation transformer was replaced, the next one failed very quickly again. And once that was replaced, we've had no problems up there. But one of the frustrations, even at that time, was the waiting for the appropriate staff to get here from Minneapolis and get the transformer. And so I say that only. Spell it out only to make this bigger point that all of our utilities have seen consolidation. And when there's been more consolidation and greater use of technology, you find fewer people close to the customer. And there's a trade-off for that. There's a cost-benefit to it, and there's a consequence to it. And I think we're in that time now where reliability, access to help, even, you know, just a face with a company, you know, all that's being measured by customers and their representatives as well as the company to find out what is the appropriate balance, you know, and including call centers and service centers and all of those things.
You mentioned the company, essentially the back and forth that you had about mm-hmm. reliability. Did you sense any, you know, I'll use the word resistance on the company's behalf to doing what you wanted to have done as far as reliability improvement?
When the one of the systems engineers came out, and he was very diligent about trying to convince us that the best way to monitor the system is they can monitor it from Minneapolis or Denver somewhere. And he didn't sell me. My concern has always been that the dedication of the percent of Xcel's system in North Dakota is very small, but they're very large for us. And so they did a very good job they tried very hard to convince us that they're doing the right thing here, but I still maintain that having someone in Fargo all the time is going to do a better job. And there wasn't resistance, but I think once they saw that the three of us weren't wavering too far on it, they changed their viewpoint.
I didn't detect any resistance, it's a process, right? I mean, the original settlement, I think, was pretty clear. We didn't have we weren't entirely comfortable that there was enough focus on reliability. The second one came back. It was a bit better, but through listening in on our work sessions, I think they had the sense that there were some other things that the commission was interested in. That was the result of that we finally ended up with that appears acceptable.
The company was responsive, but they were also I don't want to say defensive, but they defended their record. One of the things, the challenges I think that happens is when you use the modeling, and all the companies use modeling to sort of determine their reliability, and it measures outages, length of outages, and, you know, it calculates it all into the number of ratepayers and all of those things. When you're dealing with such a small universe like North Dakota is, in a larger context like XL Energy is, I think we sometimes feel a little bit like the tail is wagging the dog. And so, you know, as the people's representatives in this case, you know, we were pretty diligent, as Brian said, and the company did a good job of articulating the models and the results. But at the end of the day, the negotiation process, I think, worked to the benefit of the ratepayers, and we'll just have to see now, a year or two from now, how reliable the system is. And whether we'll probably never know whether we overreacted. But if the customers have a sense of confidence that the lights are staying on, I think it's worth it.
What is the extension of the contract with Manitoba Hydro? Could you tell me again, extended until when?
Yes, it is. For a set period of time, and then but there's a possibility beyond that. The extension would add 10 years to the existing relationship, so it would go until 2025, which would imply that that 2015 is the current PPA.
Okay. What is the How much power can they buy from Manitoba Hydro?
Well, right, it would extend until 2025 the 725 megawatt capacity and energy contract that they have. But in year 2021 of the contract, it has an option for an increase to 850 megawatts.
And is there a set price for this power?
There is, but I think it's trade secreted.
Okay.
And is this a?
I don't recall having an application yet for trade secret protection, but I'm quite certain that it's not in the. This may have gone through on consent.
How do you judge whether it's appropriate?
Trade secret?
No, how do you judge whether the price is appropriate?
Well, we'd take a look. I mean, obviously, we and or our staff takes a look at that and takes it into consideration.
Well, that's part of it is part of XL's mandate from Minnesota, correct? For renewable energy, do you know, or?
You know, I can't say with certainty because, as I recall, the Minnesota legislation had some exclusions, and hydro might be one of those.
Hydro might not be considered renewable, as crazy as it sounds.
As hot as it sounds, for whatever reason.
That's what I understand it. It's not considered renewable in Minnesota.
But what it does do, without prejudging the case, or we've been told in the past, is that it tends to pair fairly well with wind because it's highly dispatchable. And so I assume we may hear some about that.
What I was getting at earlier is that, okay, let's just say I'm an XL Energy customer, and I'm thinking about, well, do I want to ask for a hearing about this ADP? And one of the, I guess, big questions that I'd have would be, how much are they paying for it? And
Right. Basically
you're saying, well, sorry, we can't tell you.
Well, anyone can take a look at it. You just have to sign the trade secret agreements, which means you can't look at it and then publish it to the world. And it's for good business reasons. Two businesses negotiating a contract is a transaction cost. You wouldn't necessarily want to have
broadcast. What's the deadline for asking for a hearing, please?
It is
April 22nd for hearing and April 15th for intervention.
You wouldn't need to hold a hearing on this, would you, unless somebody asked for one?
No, and staff on its own motion could ask for one as well. And there's a filing fee in the case, so they'd have the ability to hire consultants to take a peek at it.
There was one thing I wanted to add on the rate case. We talked a lot about reliability, but there was another thing that came out on this that, you know, we're never going to be at 100% reliability. And I think customers have got away from surge protectors and those kind of things. So we did talk about a renewed emphasis on that because it'll never be 100%. And so the customers themselves can't forget about those things because as homes become, you know, more reliant on electronic devices, they should have surge protectors in place.
Do you have a surge protector in your home?
I have several of them. After the XL case, I went and bought a whole bunch.
There are fewer trees in Bismarck.
That's a true statement.
Okay, are there any other questions? You know, I would be remiss. We've mentioned North Fargo a number of times.
Oh, boy,
today.
Here we go.
And I would be remiss if I didn't note the state high school hockey state champions, Fargo North Spartans, who on their way, I'm sorry, Commissioner Kalk, defeated Botno.
Yes, they did.
In the state tournament, won their first hockey title since before I was a student at Fargo North, which means it was a long time ago, a long time coming. First since 86.
I mean, the fact that you used to live in North Fargo and went to North Fargo High School, that we're having all of this enlightenment about North Fargo's electric problems.
I grew up like a block from where that was, about two blocks from that, the particular block that got a lot of its equipment fried. No, there's no parochial interest here. We would have done it for downtown Grand Forks, too. All right. With that, let's close this portion of the meeting. We'll come back for the administrative portion of the agenda at, 10 to 11.